This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. The dust might have settled, but the debate still rages on. Where does the lay of the land lie after Saturday's draw against Chelsea? Hopefully, by the end of this show, we'll have an answer. Plus, there's another match to look ahead to, Brentford at the Etihad on Tuesday night. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Andrew Detmer.
Oh, I'm second means second, doesn't it? Not after me. What an idiot I am. For some reason, I thought you meant second meaning after me. What a fucking idiot I am.
We should just leave that in. It's brilliant.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
What's here for Gundogan? It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. What a panel we have here. At least I thought before that mess up in the introduction. Just when things were already poised and heating up, we wheel out these two. It's like sending in a pair of arsonists to put out a fire. Andrew, how was your weekend and how's the reaction been since that Chelsea game?
Weekend overall has been good. It is the NBA All-Star weekend here in Indianapolis, so a lot of celebrities are in town and some cool events going on, so that's been fun. Got to see Bill DeFilippo, who's a big City fan, who's here covering the NBA as part of his day job, so we watched the match together. The company for the match was great, the result less so, but John Ashley and I did discover that he watched the game with his cousin, and the last time he watched a game with his cousin was a draw against Southampton. And similarly, or that was the last match that cousin had gone to a match. And he watched that game with Bill at a bar in Boston and it was a draw. So I think basically what we've learned is John's cousin and Bill DeFilippo cannot watch matches with anyone affiliated with this podcast.
Yeah, let's put it in legislation. Man City expert Joe Butterfield, how's things?
It's fine. That tweet's done nothing good for me, that has it.
That's all you're going to be known as from now on. That's it.
Forever and ever.
Yeah, it's not been a bad weekend. I mean, yesterday, obviously, you know, we'll get into it. It was frustrating. It is what it is. But other than that, it's been all right. I've done enough today to manage to avoid having to think about it for the rest of the day, which is quite good, rather than just stewing on it.
Yeah, it was interesting. We obviously recorded the reaction podcast, and if you haven't listened to that, go back on your feed. You will be able to find it almost, 2-4 hours after full time. Sorry, so that was really raw. And having listened back to it, I enjoyed it myself. If I do say so, listeners, maybe you will as well. Hopefully, we will provide a little bit more articulated insight into that game. Although, given the two chaps in front of me, maybe that will be a bit of a big ask. But
Yeah, exactly. Let's get into that game then. Just a quick general thought, Andrew, on what you thought it went like. Obviously, like I said on that reaction show, I've shared my thoughts, so the floor is for you guys to take. But Man City won, Chelsea won. I've maybe changed a little bit. I don't think it was necessarily as bad a point as some people have made out, but I completely understand the frustrations that have been brewing over the last 48, 72 hours or so.
So my reaction is that, and I said this earlier in the season, that you can have chaos players and you can have these kind of like game-changing players who seize on moments in a team. But in order to do that, you need to have a steady base to do it from. And so overall, I'm not frustrated by the point or necessarily the result. I mean, I'm obviously frustrated by the result, but in the sense of that a point to Chelsea, who have played well against the bigger teams this season, because it's actually the type of match that lets them do what they want to do. My frustration is that from the moment the lineup was announced, I looked at it and said, we're going to be playing into Chelsea's hands exactly how they want to play. And much like the previous match against Chelsea, that proved to be exactly correct. And so for me, I looked at it, and the fact that, like, with Jack being injured and Bernardo kind of having a bit of a knock, I think that does maybe limit a little bit what Pep was able to do or consider. Mm. But I don't get how Bernardo is the first and only sub that gets made in that match, when to me it was clear 20 minutes in what was going to happen. And but for some great defending by Nathan Ake and a couple of great kind of coming out to get the ball by Ederson, we could have given up several more goals. And so the frustrating part for me is not the result. It is the performance and the lack of an understanding of, hey, what is Pep seeing that I'm not? Because I just don't get what he liked about that performance at all, to where the only change that happens is, you know, Bernardo.
Mm. I think that's fair. I will say that obviously the second half was much better from City, but as mentioned on the first show of the week, I don't know how much that was down to the fact that Chelsea had the goal lead to protect and were just happy to bunker and maybe try and catch City on the break, which, like you say, they could have very easily been 2-0 up. That save from Ederson, having seen it back now, is absolutely astonishing. You know, he does so well to keep it out of the net. But Joe, do you think there's a bit of a problem starting to brew with City so far this season? And we can say so far this season, because we're enough time in now to the campaign to be able to make sort of those sweeping judgments. We've seen enough football whereby City seem to be incapable of putting together two halves of solid football. And I don't necessarily mean the sort of Real Madrid level domination we saw in the semi-final. You know, you expect those games to come towards the end of the campaign if City are in that mould and they're fighting for trophies. But just in these sort of semi-big matches, semi-big contests, I think it's one win against the big six so far this season. It seems to be like we require a mastermind turnaround in the second half, or if we have played really well in the first half, we completely shit the bed in the second and concede sloppy goals and give throwaway points.
Yeah, I think Andrew's kind of hit the actual main issue sort of on the head there, in terms of like the complete lack of control that we've had this season, which has probably been 99% of the reason why the performances and results have been the way they have. Like, for every, you know, for every team where you don't necessarily need to have all elements of control to win, which, because of the quality that we do have, we're quite lucky that, you know, maybe over half the teams that we'll play in the Premier League, we can kind of get away with having a setup like that and still win, just because of the quality of the players that we've got. I know Alvarez is getting a lot of stick for his midfield performances at the moment, and like, yeah, maybe in these kind of games it's not great, but obviously it has worked throughout the season. He's been very good through, like, on the whole this season, so he's not necessarily the problem.
I think you're hitting on a good point. It's not Alvarez in and of himself that is the issue for me, because you're right, he has been good throughout the season. The problem is that now that you have Kevin De Bruyne back in the side, you don't have Grealish on the left or Bob on the left or Bernardo in the side as well. I don't get how you look at a front six of this team of Rodri, Akanji, Doku, Alvarez, De Bruyne, Foden, and Haaland and say, yeah, that's a good setup to not have a match devolve into absolute nonsense, because that's just what happened. And so it's, I'm not criticizing, like, to me, again, this is not about any individual player. It's about that collection of players does not make sense for this type of a match. And the same thing was true of the other Chelsea match. I feel like the Liverpool match this season, like, it feels like Pep, despite historically going into big matches wanting to control the ball, has continually rolled out lineups that are just designed to not control the ball in a way. I mean, yes, we had 70% possession, but like, it was not sustained control or effective control.
I'm going to get into it. I can get into an individual if you like. Jack Grealish. I mean, I've just got to say, if you are one of the many, many fans who in this first sort of 2 to 3 months of this season were saying that Jack Grealish is done and that Jeremy Doku is like the greatest thing to ever reach these shores since Kevin De Bruyne, then you deserve what happened at the weekend, like, quite frankly, because that is exactly what that is exactly what happens when you don't have a player like Jack Grealish. And I mentioned on Twitter after the game that, like, the loss of Riyad Mahrez is obviously another sort of big thing that we've kind of has kind of gone quite under the radar this summer, given that his age and the sort of the kind of deal that we managed to get out of Saudi for him. But last season, we obviously saw a lot of performances where Grealish and Mahrez were the two wingers. And I remember for quite some time, we didn't really like it because it was a bit boring. Games really slowed down and it could sometimes look like it was difficult to see where a goal was coming from in those games. But we didn't give up goals. Like, we were totally in control of those games. And we've gone from that to having Foden playing out on the wing, where, yes, Foden's a very good winger, and that's like, Foden's kind of suffering from the fact that he's basically world-class wherever you put him. And so he's being put out there to facilitate De Bruyne and Alvarez in the middle. And Doku on the left, who for all the things that he's good at, and there are some things that he's good at, control is not one of them. Like, he's good at beating a fullback. He's good at beating a mid to lower table fullback and rinsing him and causing chaos against a team that is sitting back and just basically putting 10 men behind the ball. Chelsea is these big six games that we've only won one of so far this season, and the only one that Doku hasn't played in, by the way, is the only one that we've won. They are not games for Jeremy Doku, and obviously our hand was forced a little bit on Saturday because obviously Jack Grealish is injured and he can't play that game. But I just feel like if you are to put it, we've got, as Andrew just said, like, we've got chaos players, and I think Alvarez and Doku are definitely players of those kind. I don't think that you can have too many of those players in a team. If you want to play just Alvarez surrounded by our ideal starting 11, great. If you want to play just Doku surrounded by our ideal starting 11, great. But if you're putting three or four of these players and also a Kanji in the middle as well rather than Stones, if you're putting three or four of these players who are obvious not control players into the team, it's no wonder we get results and performances like we did at the weekend. And I'm quite glad to see that a lot of people who were sort of bemoaning what does Jack Grealish give us apart from backwards and sideways passes are suddenly starting to wake up and realize just exactly what he does offer us, because games at the weekend are what we get when we don't have him.
And the issue to me, too, is that, and I think some of this comes with time, and both of playing at City and time playing, is that for me, the issue with Alvarez and Doku more than anything is there were multiple moments where they made the incorrect decision. And I think they made the incorrect decision because they are both very used to being one of the best players on every team they have ever been on. That is not the case here. And so when you have Doku and Alvarez out touching the ball compared to Foden and De Bruyne, that's just insane. Like, Doku, you are not the man on this team. So if there is not something that is a very clear and obvious decision for you to go past someone, don't dribble back and like stay on the ball the whole time. Like, recycle the ball and move it. Like, we were moving the ball so slow, and a lot of it was that when the ball got over to Alvarez or Doku, it was just not coming back. And so Chelsea could easily just kind of keep the ball in front of them. And then, you know, look, I don't blame Haaland. Like, he is still having a great goal scoring season. He wasn't always going to be this guy who basically gets double the goals of his XG every game. Like, that's just insane. He wasn't going to do that. And so he's allowed to not score goals like he was yesterday. I'm not saying he had a good day at the office, but like he was getting into good positions, but largely he was also covered because the ball was getting to him so slowly that Chelsea could easily defend it. And that just comes down to like the left wing and left midfield that we had, the ball got there and it stayed there for far too long. And there's a difference between I'm going to hold the ball and like find the right pass, and the ball got to me, I need to make something happen, so I'm just going to keep the like the ball and dribble kind of nowhere. And that happened multiple times.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a fair assessment, and maybe this game will be something that Guardiola learns from. Speaking of, or maybe not speaking about individuals, Joe, you're not going to be on Kyle Walker's Christmas card list, I don't think. It's safe to say that you have quite the gripe against City's captain, and perhaps understandably so. We didn't really touch on it yesterday's episode, or whenever you listened to it, the first episode of the week. But what on earth was he doing for that Raheem Sterling goal? I mean, you can possibly excuse the fact that he tries to cover the space to Nicholas Jackson, and then, you know, whatever. I'm just trying to come up with an answer for the first part, but the second part where he's played with Raheem Sterling for what? Going on a decade at England and Manchester City level, you know, whatever, however long it is. I don't think I've ever seen him take a shot with his left foot. Ever. Ever. No. You know, not even just like the odd one. I don't think I've ever seen it. So what does he do? He lets him cut onto his right.
Yeah, it is difficult to sort of work out what his initial run is actually trying to achieve. I can only think that he is trying to double up on Jackson, like you say, but I mean, Nicholas, if you're going to pick one player of the two, it's difficult to pick between the two of them, but you've got to pick one of the two that you think is a slightly more of a dangerous goal threat between Jackson and Sterling. And it's
if Jackson is able to score a goal on us, that's fine. Fine. I don't expect him to do it. So don't double, like, care about the guy who for a decade has been one of the best forwards in the Premier League. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I think it's a mad decision to sort of just completely ignore the entire, because if you're the right back and you're there, odds are there's absolutely nobody behind you covering the entire, like the other two thirds of the pitch. Anyway, so he gets there, and obviously the ball then comes across to Sterling. So, like you say, Walker just sprints at the space in front of Sterling at full pelt, making the cut inside just the easiest decision that Sterling could ever make, because unless Walker is able to literally do a 100...
It's his factory default setting, isn't it?
It's madness.
That's what he's done for a decade.
Unless Walker can do a 180 degree turn on literally with zero, just literally like a video game character just going straight back again. You've just given him a goal, and I know that this isn't even anything to do with I don't even think that goal was bad, but I don't think that's the worst crime that he committed on Saturday. That shot in the 92nd minute is the most, it's honestly an absolute war crime. It's an absolute disgrace. I don't know what he was thinking, but we've seen this multiple times. It's like every time that we're in a game where we need a goal, he did it in the last Chelsea game where he took a free kick for some reason in the 95th minute. We're in a position where every time we need a goal and it's 90 plus minutes, Kyle Walker sees his name in lights and just thinks, I'm going to have a shot here. You scored one, Kyle. You did it against Sheffield United 4 years ago and you've never done it since. What are you doing?
I have a question for you about that Walker shot. So I was watching in a pub and like could hear, like you could overall hear like crowd reaction and noise coming through the TV, but like it was the pub was packed, so it was hard to like overall, like what was the reaction in stadium? Because genuinely the anger from the City fans at this pub when he takes that and I was just like, okay, maybe he saw something, and then watching the replay I'm like, no, there was zero, like nothing justifies that shot, particularly for Walker. So what was the in-stadium reaction?
I think my career would be in the mud, as they say, if I repeated anywhere near the sort of level of verbal abuse that was thrown towards the City captain. I mean, the weird thing is, look, the goal is not necessarily entirely on him, because it had been coming. That sort of goal had been coming for Chelsea. It looked a mile off. In fact, I said to my dad at the time, what's going to happen now in the rest of this half? We're going to go down on an attack. We're going to fluff up some sort of golden chance. Chelsea's going to get the ball. They're going to go down the opposite end of the stadium and score. That's exactly what happened. But I didn't actually think he was as bad as he has been at points this season. It's just those brain farts that are just like, what is they're he getting? You know, this fellow, what is he, 33 years old or something?
Yeah.
He's an experienced pro.
They're getting more. Like, if it was a case of, with Kyle Walker, if it was a case of his, if the goals he was giving up were due to physical shortcomings because of his age, I'd be like, right, whatever, you switched on, but you're getting old, this is how it is. Yeah. But he's getting older, and his decision-making's getting worse. Like, I don't understand what...
So the one caveat on this goal, and I need to watch it back more, and part of the problem is that every... The replays I've seen, I don't have enough of a clear kind of look to see how much of it comes from. And it's something I've harped on about one of the biggest issues with Doku is that he does leave us exposed on the left. And so how much of that was Walker had to get pulled over because we're running this three at the back and we're just out of position because of kind of how the setup was. And then it just leaves us exposed on the right because multiple goals this season have come from ball gets turned over on the left. We have to get over to recover it. And then somebody's clear down our right.
I think Leipzig got a couple.
Yeah.
Similar sort of style. We seem to have picked the bones out. I think this is one of those games where we could probably stick on five episodes to cover all of the Chelsea talking points. We'll call it a day there. Join us, listeners, after the break as we look ahead to the Brentford match, which is on Tuesday evening.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content, of course. Before we move on to that Brentford game, and I guess we can tie this sort of topic into it, Joe, big picture, do you think this, and this is maybe my galaxy brain take for the week, but was that a good point for City to drop, or 2 points to drop? Now, hear me out. Obviously, we've mentioned so many frailties, so many flaws in the performance, but maybe that's kind of the point. And I hark back to, I think it was Nottingham Forest at a similar time last season, where City just started to get the sort of the wheels in motion. They were looking strong. I think we had a 6 or 7 game winning streak at that point. Obviously not as lengthy as this 11 one that's just finished. But it kind of, not necessarily a reality check, but just like, okay, you know, there's still plenty of work to do. It isn't a polished, you know, City aren't the polished item yet. And it just maybe lit that fire a little bit underneath the bellies of the City players. And I think from that point on, they possibly went unbeaten, or they won X amount of Premier League matches, et cetera, et cetera. So do you think, you know, as frustrating as it was, it was a decent point because the players will be as frustrated as we are coming on here and speaking about it?
Yeah, I think it's coming off the back of the Everton game in particular. There was a lot of sort of, oh, well, City, like, I think there was it Barney Ronnie who wrote that, you know, like, oh, well, you know, pack it up, everyone, City going to win another treble. And I think...
No. It was in the conditional tense. Conditional tense,
oh,
it's fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's fine. Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah. We don't have the same grasp of the English language that our esteemed Barney Ronne has. So I think given that that was kind of the reaction coming out of that, when obviously the Everton game in particular was a performance that really did not warrant treble talk. Like, it wasn't a very good performance in my opinion. Certainly not the first half anyway. The second half was very good, but the first half was pretty bang average, to be honest, if not bad. So it's good that points have been dropped, but it's frustrating that it's come after what was probably one of our best performances in recent months against Copenhagen. Like, obviously, now Copenhagen are a Danish team that haven't played football in 2 months, basically. So it's not really the best barometer of how good we're doing. But I just think the main reason why it's a negative to have dropped points is that it's another top six team that we've not beat. And I think that given what March is going to look like, it would have been really nice to go into that knowing that we can beat a top six team that isn't Manchester United. Now, I fully expect us to beat Manchester United because, you know, we're doing that at home. United are pretty, imagine even their results are looking all right at the moment. It's not really the best time to, it's not even the best time to be playing them. So I think going into Anfield with more than one win against a top six side this season would be nice. But I just think, realistically, to win the league, you need to beat the teams around you, and we just haven't done that this season. So it's put us in a position where, with Arsenal and Liverpool just storming away and beating all the teams that they should beat, we're just relying on...
I will say, though, they both have had issues beating the top six. Like, this is a title race largely because none of the three teams that are at the top of the league are pulling away from one another. They are clearly better than the other teams in the league. But amongst the three of them, there actually has not been a team that has yet grabbed kind of the rest of the league by the throat and said, I got this. And that's for, a lot of different reasons. Liverpool have had some key injuries. You know, Arsenal are still not a fully developed team, kind of in their second year of being at this level. City have had both injuries and I think have an imperfect squad. Like, I don't know that we're going to see a team that kind of comes out and gets on a run. Part of it may just come down to how many competitions are each of the three teams kind of in that causes them to be able to prioritize the league versus having to, you know, if City has to worry about UCL games and Liverpool is, you know, out of the Europa League and just as focused on the Premier League, like that could be difficult. Same thing if Arsenal drops out of the Champions League. But Liverpool have not had a great record this season. And so I think as long as we don't lose at Anfield, we actually are in a good position for the remainder of the season. But I do think that it's going to take a couple of statement wins from City against good opposition to really start to demonstrate that they could win this. They definitely still can. It's just, to me right now, they haven't done anything that you go, yeah, okay, they're correctly fired up and like in the right mindset right now.
Yeah, it's bad of me to do this because it sort of implies that, yeah, maybe City will go on and win another treble. But I am sort of looking back at last season and just for sort of clarity on the fact, because I think most people look back at the last couple of months of last season and maybe clouded the judgment in the fact that they believe it was all great. But, you know, we are talking about sort of late March, April is the time when City really started to get going. You know, in February, for example, Aston Villa at home, that was the game after the charges. We won that 3-1. And then obviously there was that game again away to Arsenal this time last year, actually. I think it was last week, last year. Then there was the Forest game, which was on the 18th of Feb. Then it was after that, City had an immense winning streak, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Palace. But it wasn't until the 1st of April, which was the first game after the international break against Liverpool, where City really had that statement game, and maybe that sort of mirrors up with the run that's coming ahead in a couple of weeks' time. But I guess we will chat about Brentford because that is the next match on the horizon for City. And Joe, I reckon I'm quietly excited for this one. I don't know, and this is probably it's probably going to come back and bite me, but given that sort of pent-up anger at the end of the game and maybe you, having seen a couple of refereeing decisions, penalty, potential red card for Caicedo, I can imagine there's an injustice within the dressing room, not only from their performance, but God, we should have won that game, blah, blah, blah. I reckon this could be one of those matches where we see a little bit of a schooling from City against Brentford. And obviously we've played them, 14 days ago, something like that. I think this could be a big one for City.
I definitely hope so. I think that, if you think how frustrated we are as fans, then you can only imagine what that dressing room's feeling like at the moment, given, you know, Haaland in particular is going to be looking back at some of the chances that he should have scored and thinking, I've got to do something on Tuesday here. So I'm really hoping that turns out to be the case. I think we've got a team that typically is pretty good at bouncing back from these kind of results. Obviously, it wasn't a defeat, so it's not like you're coming back from having lost or anything like that. But a game where the performance was just so bad. I think that, you know, even Pep, when even Pep's coming out and saying that we didn't look like ourselves in the first half, like Pep, who is eternally positive in these kind of post-match conferences, to the point where it can be a bit frustrating sometimes that you won't just say that we were shit when we were. But for even him to sort of say we didn't look like ourselves, that means that's about as close to we were shit as you're going to get from Pep, really. So I think that in the dressing room and sort of on the training ground in the last couple of days is going to be a lot of, you know, we can't put in a performance like that again. I hope that the team that he puts out reflects that, and we sort of go for a much more. I want to see Rico Lewis come back. I want to see Kovacic come in, Rico Lewis come in. I want to see some of these players who, at the start of the season, we were looking at and thinking, like, these are going to have big seasons for City. And sort of, for one reason or another, obviously with Kovacic, it's been sort of more injury in the last, you know, month or two. But Rico Lewis seems to just gone missing for no reason. And it's just like, when Alvarez has been, he's started every single Premier League game so far this season and is kind of not looking like his best self in the last few weeks. It's like, well, just... What does Lewis have to do to get a chance? Like what does Nunez have to do to get a, you know, a proper run of games in the Premier League? Like, use some of these players that you haven't used for the last few weeks that are maybe looking a bit to replace players who are looking a bit out of form. So hopefully we will see a bit of a change up. Obviously Bernardo presumably just wasn't fit enough to start on Saturday, so maybe he comes into the starting 11 now that he's had that game off where he only played 20-30 minutes. Yeah, fingers crossed that we just see a bit of a bit of rotation in the side and hopefully a bit of a different performance to sort of match that.
Yeah, I totally concur with that. And Brentford maybe not the best opposition you want, but if you look at their recent form, they've absolutely nosedived, including that game against City where when City were good, they made them look a bit amateurish, and it was only that long ball from Flecken through to Mopai via a very clever Ivan Tony shield that obviously led to the goal. But Brentford obviously won here at the Etihad last season. Andrew, we'll begin to wind down. Apologies for not sort of having a massive in-depth preview for this match. I'm sure listeners, you can understand why, given the fallout from the weekend. But what sort of team do you reckon we will see? Because I'm expecting what we know on Tuesday. City don't play until the 5:30 game away to Bournemouth on Saturday. So there's a good chunk, what, sort of 4 days, I think, really, at least of training and rest, etc. You probably expect as full strength aside as possible, with maybe one or two tweaks. It'll be interesting to see after the criticism and obviously the what I believe to be recognition from Guardiola that Alvarez, Foden, Doku and Kevin De Bruyne all sort of deployed in those attacking positions, along with Haaland, of course, didn't work given the early substitution. It'll be interesting to see what the front end of the team looks like, because for me anyway, the back end is kind of sorting itself out, and you know, whoever comes in, you can trust them. The talking points are at that top end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Brentford want to play a very similar game to how Chelsea approach this. Their players are not as gifted, but I would argue their manager is more gifted. I think that in my mind, Thomas Frank is a much better manager than, you know, Pochettino is. I think if you are a team right now that is looking to have a manager who can work within a structure and be handed kind of players and develop a system and know how to maximize players, that Thomas Frank is really good at that. And there are players in that Brentford team that concern me a lot. Especially based on how we played against Chelsea. So yeah, I want to see a team where there is a maximum of one of Alvarez or Doku. I'm fine with Akanji being in there, because to me, the issue with Akanji is less of it is Akanji, and it is more of, if we lose the ball, he is not as well suited to do the midfield things that Stones does. But like, I think the issues for City this season have almost entirely come from the top to the back. Like, the things at the back that are issues are only issues because actually the midfield and the forward line have had problems.
Yeah,
and so I really like, I don't care who is on there defense wise. Rodri's obviously a lock. everything in front of that. Like, I want to,
which is frustrating, isn't it? Because he's now played. I was doing some research before the game for a piece of writing I was doing, but he started every single Premier League match this season that he's been available for. Obviously, yeah. Bar the ones he was suspended for, which is just mental.
Yeah, no, I would love if he didn't, but unfortunately, I mean, maybe you could play Kovacic at the sixth. I don't think you could play him in the sixth against Brentford.
Probably not worth the risk, is it?
No, it's not worth the risk. And frankly, Rodri hasn't shown tiredness signs, and I think there's an amount of
which is equally scary as well at the same time.
Yeah, no, it for sure is. But for me, like, I, you know, Joe kind of hit the nail on the head for me. Like, if I'm designing a lineup for this team, it's going to be probably Rodri, De Bruyne, Kovacic, Foden, Bob, Holland. Like, that's what I would want to see. If Bernardo's fully fit, bring him in. I'm happy if Rico's that, but basically just give me players that I know to make the right decision and aren't going to try to force things, because what we saw this past match, I think we even saw a little bit, in the Copenhagen match, is too many players trying to force the issue rather than believe in the system and the Guardiola way to just pass a team to death, strangle them, and then make one incisive pass, get the goal, and then close up shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, Joe, Kevin De Bruyne is an interesting one, isn't he? Because his performance-wise has almost proven to us that he's undroppable. And I mean, there's no surprises there. But at the same time, he has just had, 6 months out injured? And he is not necessarily the wrong side of 30, but getting on in football terms. This would probably have been a game where Guardiola might have circled it or highlighted it and gone, okay, maybe we can rest him there. But given the reaction that's probably going to be needed after the weekend result, it feels like he's going to have to play again.
Yeah, he's just had two 90 minutes back-to-back as well, which is really not ideal, having to then go into this game and probably needing him. But I think, I don't know, I think because of how, because realistically when we were playing against Brentford the last time, obviously Flecken had like the game of his life, but I think De Bruyne did start that game, didn't he? Am I right in thinking that?
He was
pretty instrumental in sort of the chances that we created. So annoyingly, you're kind of going to be looking to him to do that again. But equally, if Bernardo's fit, I might just rest him, put Phil in the middle, put Phil central, and put Bernardo out on the right. Like, I'm fine with that as well. Like, I just think if it's not like,
or even flip it.
Or, yeah, or Bernardo in the middle. Yeah. Whatever. I don't think we're in a position where, obviously, as good as De Bruyne is, I don't think we've immediately just, like, folded back into a position where if De Bruyne's not on the pitch, we don't win. Like, we've been doing it without him for the most of the season up until the last three or four weeks when De Bruyne has been back. Like, we are still capable of winning games without him. And we don't want him to, you know, we don't want him to be going into the horrible run that we've got in March coming off the back of having played multiple 90 minutes back-to-back-to-back when he's... We don't know what that's going to do to his body, given the injury he's just come back from. So if he starts, you know, fair enough. Like, obviously, the physios and everyone, the fitness coaches at the club will know better than we do. But ultimately, at the same time, you could drop him. You could rotate him out for this game, and I wouldn't really complain.
Yeah. And as well, De Bruyne is never the sort of player. I thought he didn't really have a great game against Chelsea, but he's never the sort of player who you're going to take off mid-match because he can just make something happen. The same as Erling Haaland. But I do think there's something to be said, as we saw against Everton, him coming off the bench. If you don't have the game won, then he's a great... I mean, he's the best asset to come off the bench. Absolutely. We saw it against Newcastle as well. Saw it against Everton. So I think that's maybe something Guardiola can use more. And that obviously opens up the door for Alvarez to play in that position again, and et cetera, et cetera. But we've been through that a million times. Right, okay, guys, thank you very much. Andrew, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers, as always.
Joe, thank you very much. No more ruffling feathers, you. You've done enough this weekend.
And this podcast might do a bit of that. That was nice. It was cathartic. I enjoyed that. That was, thank you very much.
That's what we're here for, therapy sessions. Invoices coming afterwards. Listeners, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Like I said, if you haven't already, I'll point you towards the review episode. That was a little bit more, let's say, intense. This has been a nice chat. I feel a bit more calm now afterwards, whereas the other one, I think, got a few people riled up, which is what we're here to do. But listeners, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And until next time, we will see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season running with McDelivery.
great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.